Members, I'm going to bring this committee to order. We have a variety of bills. We have one bill up, and we're going to do a good number of amendments to it. So I will...
Representative Mahoney gets up to the desk, if someone moves the minutes, that would be helpful of our last meeting. Representative Haas.
I would like to approve the minutes.
Representative Haas moves the approval of the March 24th, 2009 minutes. Any discussion? Oh, sorry, March
23rd?
We don't want to do it on March 124th. So thank you, Representative Anderson. This was a correction to the date, which should be the 24th. Any other changes or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor of approval of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? And the motion prevails. Good catch. Representative Mahoney, would you be so kind as to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes, I'd like to move House File 927 to Higher Ed and Workforce Finance. I have an amendment that brings in three different bills, and we're working on a fourth at the present time. Intended to save floor time and committee time. So what I'll do until I get that one here is I will explain what the bill does, and I will be going off of the previous file, not the delete all amendments. The delete all amendments just adds those particular bills, which is some plumbing, some boiler operator, and there's some med gas, and I'm missing on the fourth one. So go off the original. And I'll start by just saying Section 1 changes the word service in three locations to issuance. Section 2 would add a new subdivision on unlicensed advertising, and this would allow the commissioner to take enforcement action if an unlicensed person offers to perform the services for which a license is required. And just so people understand, there, in one of the other committees, we added on, unless the person holds an active license to perform these services. That was more comfort language for the big utilities that run monthly, what's the maintenance, I can't think of what they call it, but it's when you pay your service charge for maintenance. You can call them up at 2 a.m. in the morning and they'll send somebody out. And you don't have to pay that bill, you're paying on a monthly basis. Section 3 is in a, it cleans up last year's cleanup bill on the statewide building code. It exempts the interior plumbing. The current language exempts the interior plumbing systems from being required to comply with the plumbing code when it is connected to a well or septic system. Section 3 would just require that if you're on a septic system or on a well, you have to meet the plumbing code inside your house. Sections 4, 6, 9, and 10 are corrections. Amendments correct the intent of the legislature to have the plumbing board responsible for the adoption of the plumbing code related to water conditioning installation, the licensure of water conditioning installers and contractors, and clarifies the responsibilities, which responsibilities are assigned to the plumbing board and which are assigned to the commissioner. The adoption of the plumbing code over the water conditioning, what they were finding is that plumbers actually were having to go out and get a water conditioning installation license. Kind of silly because they're kind of the, I don't want to say a step above, but their license should cover anything with potable water. Licensure of water conditioning installers and contractors, goes right back to what we were talking about. The clarification of the responsibilities of the plumbing board, assigned to the plumbing board and the commissioner, what that does is it clarifies the responsibility that the commissioner has the responsibility to hire inspectors, not the plumbing board. The plumbing board is not set up to hire people, it's set up to determine codes. Section 5, the restricted journeyman plumber in cities under 5,000 right now are required to have a bond, which is ridiculous because the only reason you don't want to have a bond is if you could pull a permit, and the only people allowed to pull a permit are either the homeowner or a master plumber. So the journeyman plumber, restricted journeyman plumber was being required to spend money that they didn't have to, and this just saves money for the restricted journeyman plumber. Section 7, 8, and 11, these amendments go to the water conditioning installers and contractors, and we did not take the exemption of cities under 5,000 for the water conditioning installers, and they want to be treated the same as the plumbers. It brings... that's deleted out of there. Let me get to the next page. Section 12 removes unnecessary words, such as the and corrects the typographical error, the reference to, wait a minute, the owner maintenance program under Section 12. That's a whole lot more than that. Well, I will jump to Section 13, which is supposed to reinsert. No, I'm working off of a different deleto. Let me get to the correct one here. Section 13 is just deleting, this amendment reinserts words that were inadvertently omitted when the statute was amended and renumbered. These words need to be added back into the statute since the cites misconduct by the owner or officer, because otherwise you wouldn't have anyone to hold responsible. And that's what we're trying to do is if you have done something wrong, you should be held responsible for it. And which is grounds for license sanctions. A lot of words, a lot of type for just a couple of words. Mm-hmm. But we had eliminated the person who you were supposed to hold responsible, and this just puts the fact in. Section 15, these amendments charge the Department of Labor and Industry to maintain a qualified boiler inspector. This gives the 75 boiler manufacturers and repair shops in Minnesota the option to choose between a national audit or an audit performed by Minnesota qualified inspectors. This is an option we eliminated back in 2003, and we have found that it costs those 75 boiler manufacturers and repair shops about $5,000 to get certified by a national organization. It should only cost them, it'll cost less than $2,000 to get certified by a statewide or by state boiler inspectors. Go to Section 17. The bill also requires the plumbing board to modify, the plumbing board to modify the plumbing code to include any provisions relating to water conditioning installation. This will allow the plumbing board to use the good cause exemption to shorten the rulemaking process, which in essence can save about $200,000, and everybody seems to be okay with this. The repealer, the repealer is 326B.43. This is an agreement 25 years ago that shall be required no license or registration authorized by Section 326 shall be required of any individual engaged in or employed by a person engaged in the work or business of pipeline outside of a building if such individual employer is engaged in a business or trade which was traditionally performed such work. We addressed that in the Big 1205 bill, and it's no longer needed in law. Now, do I have all the amendments for this?
Mr. Representative Mahoney, I do have actually one question about that earlier bill. It goes to that issue in Section 1 on the service versus issuance. Under the current law, the service date would be when the person receives it, as opposed to the issuance.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
Oh, sorry. I'm back to Section 1 of the bill. There's a change making it to 30 days after service as opposed to 30 days after issuance. And I don't know if you know the answer, but I interpreted that to be that the service was when the person received the order as opposed to the date that the department issued the order. I'm just wondering why that change is in place, if you know, or what the purpose of that is.
I can call down the department, John Murkowski. My belief is that they were having trouble tracking people down. But if Mr. Murkowski is in the audience.
Mr. Chair, while people are getting settled here, could you kind of review where we're at procedurally? I don't recall. We're apparently working off the DE2 amendment or off of the original bill.
Representative Hilty, right now, Representative Mahoney has moved House File 927, and there haven't been any amendments offered to it, and so he's still addressing the issues that were in that initial bill. And so that's where we are.
I'm sure there have been references by the author to amendments, but I think we only have one amendment in our packet, which is the delete all amendments.
That's correct, Ms. Representative Hilty. There is only that, but I understand that there may be a pending motion to the one that's being distributed now to add House File 1834 into this, and I think that's the reference to plural amendments. We'll let Representative Mahoney address that issue as we go forward.
Correct. Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, we're probably not going to add the 1834 at this time. We'll have to, because we don't have it in an amendment form, we just have it in the bill form. So rather than try and amend it into the bill, we'll just do it in another committee if we get the opportunity, or Representative Thiessen will have to take it to the floor himself.
Okay. Thank you. Sir, could you please identify yourself for the record?
Certainly. Mr. Chairman, I'm John Rakowski with the Department of Labor and Industry, and your reading of this change from the term service to issuance is correct. I was asked this by House Counsel, House Research, as well as by our department attorney, who asked that this be changed from service to issuance. It'll make the term more consistent throughout the statute.
And just a follow-up to that then, Mr. Rakowski. There's a chance then that an issuance might trigger a 30-day period before the actual person who's the subject of the order actually receives it. I mean, it's possible that they won't. Would the department be interpreting that to mean you have a defense when that happens?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
All right, thank you. Representative Mahoney, then, before we go back there, I wanted to recognize we've got some students in the audience here who are joining us from, looks like St. Louis Park High School, the ninth grade students, and want to say welcome. I'm hoping that when you get a chance to watch the process we're doing here, that you all want to run for office. I'm trying to think of whose district it must be. Steve Simon, maybe? Oh, Ryan Winkler, who unfortunately stepped away, but run against him, that's a good idea. Sometimes I'll
like that idea.
but welcome to the committee, and I hope you enjoy your time at the Capitol. Representative Mahoney.
That's not good, Bill. And this is okay. Mr. Chair, I would like to move the DE2 amendment.
All right.
And what I'll do is on page 10 of the DE amendment, B, would delete all amendments to E2. I would like to call down Representative Gunther, whose bill it is, and we're going to roll that into this particular bill. And then I will call down Mr. Nelson next.
All right, Representative Mahoney moves that the approval of the DE2 amendment, and I take it this is an author amendment to put the bill in the form that you want to see it in?
That is correct.
Discuss it. Is there any discussion to the DE2 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE2 amendment, please say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and now the bill is amended. And Representative Mahoney to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I will turn this over to Representative Gunther. This is a bill he is carrying forth, and we're just going to roll this in.
Mr. Chairman and members,
Ruling
this over in this bill is a very appropriate thing to do. And this bill deals with school boilers, low pressure boilers, and what we're asking is the school districts have training for these boilermen so that they operate a safe boiler. A low pressure boiler can kill someone as fast as a high pressure boiler. It needs to have a very knowledgeable person running it. And this person, I heard the school board association is testifying against this, saying it's going to cost them money. I beg to differ with them. It's going to save them money. Josh over here with SEIU said stopping one leak could save a school district $10,000. So what we're trying to do is get this cost-saving thing. If they talk to their insurance company saying that we have trained staff that has got doing ongoing training, I'm sure that every insurance company will consider lowering their insurance, and boiler is a big part of their insurance. So I disagree with the School Board Association completely. I think they'll be pleasantly surprised. I've talked to many experts, and they all agree with me. So I think this is a very appropriate place for this bill, and I am glad Representative Mahoney is amending it into his bill.
Representative Gunther, just for clarification on the record, it's Section 18 and 19 that relate to your chunk, the time limit portion, as well as the school engineer?
No, Mr. Chair, no. Section 19 does not.
No, 19 is not. Just 18?
Just 18.
All right, thank you. Any questions? I'm sorry, Representative Ashton, you were on the list earlier. I apologize.
Not to this part of this bill, but I do have a question for later.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hawks.
Thank you. Representative Gunther, I recognize the zero cost that you think it is for the school district, but if the school district was going to put what they thought the cost would be, what would they think?
Representative Gunther.
Chairman, I think they would reference the training that they have to send the boiler person to take, right. And I think that's the biggest part that they would complain about. I think when you really look at the total effect of prevention of having a boiler malfunction or anything like that, I think you would have to agree that this would save them money.
Representative Haas.
I noticed a person moving towards the chair. Do you think that might be a school district person?
Actually, I believe it's...
No.
That's the IU, I think.
Yeah.
Here, but
we'll get closer to zero on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Haas. My name is Josh Whitney Wise. I'm with SEIU. Representative Haas, you'll notice that in the language it says that the training must be administered during normal working hours, which means we're not going to be paying anyone overtime. And actually, we've been talking to our chief engineers that we have in the district, and any responsible chief engineer is actually already doing this. A lot of the school districts, you know, have good chief engineers who are bringing their second class, their special engineers down and showing them. But some districts aren't, and those are the engineers that we really want to get caught up in making the boilers more safe.
Representative Haas. Mr. Chair, thank you for that testimony. It makes me feel comfortable.
And Representative Haas, I will... Greg Schwab has contacted me yesterday late in the afternoon, and so I will explore this issue a bit more, and if there are some problems with this, it does have to go to higher ed finance, and we'll have a fuller discussion to iron that out in that particular committee.
Thank you, Representative Molloy. Representative Bryant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you may have addressed that by saying that you'll visit with Grace and take this forward to the K-12 committee. But my concern would be to know numbers on how many districts have a licensed first or chief class engineer on board already. So how many would require outside training or outside, have to bring somebody in from outside to do the training, or could provide it internally? I think those numbers would be important in making this decision. I really do understand the value of this, but I also served on a school board for quite a while and understand that the details here may be critical, and the ability, especially of smaller districts, to handle the immediate funding question.
Ms. Nicolai.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Brainerd. We can work on getting that information to you, but I should say we have talked to Joe Amato, the chief boiler inspector, and he's very supportive of this and said he would be willing to send boiler inspectors out to train these engineers if that's the case.
That's why I was just going to bring that up.
Right. Representative Mahoney.
If there's any other questions on this, otherwise we'll move to Representative Nelson's bill.
Yeah, I think what we'll do is we'll hear the three parts of the bill, and then we'll, if we have testifiers after that, we'll have those folks come down. Representative Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I'm Representative Michael Nelson. And House File 1418 is in the DE2 amendment, is Section 6. And basically what that section does is it cleans up an inadvertent oversight last year when they had created the plumbing board. The plumbing board was modeled after the electrical board, which has the power to set continuing education. And what this bill does, or now this part of the amendment does, is it gives that responsibility to the plumbing board to set continuing education standards for plumbers, and which is appropriate what the plumbing board should be doing. And that's basically what the bill does.
All right. Thank you, Representative Nelson. Are there any questions from the members for this issue? Seeing none, thank you for stopping down, I guess, and please stick around if you can for if there's any questions. Representative Hillstrom would be Representative Mahoney.
She's not here, but I'm trying to find it in the section, and if I could ask staff. Section 5.
Section 5, Representative Mahoney.
Section 5, Subdivision 1A. All state plumbing inspectors and plumbing inspectors contracted by the department shall hold licenses as master or journeyman plumbers and have 5 years of documented and practical plumbing experience. My understanding is this is what the state's doing. I have Assistant Commissioner Tom Joachim here to say a few words on this.
Mr. Joachim, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Tom Joachim, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Labor and Industry. This just adds consistency within our department. We already have statutory requirements for boiler operators, high-pressure piping inspectors, and a number of other electrical inspectors. We already advertise, if we fill positions for plumbing inspectors, that they have to have the Minnesota license, so this just clarifies in law and establishes what we already do with our practices, but makes it consistent with all the inspectors that we have within our department.
Questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Joachim, Section 5 is what we're talking about, licenses and experiences, but but also in another area, talking about license required rules and time credit on section 16, it says, and we've crossed out the language, and for issuance of permits by the department and municipalities for the installation of high pressure piping. Does that mean that the issuance of the permits are going to come from the department? Is that redundant language that we're striking? If you can enlighten me or help me with that, I'm not sure.
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, in the process of our consolidation reorganization bill, we went through and laid out what provisions are the responsibility of the High Pressure Piping Board and what provisions are the responsibility of the Commissioner. This was a sentence that said within the board's responsibility to issue permits, and that's not what all the boards are laid out to do. The boards establish the code that the state should use for high-pressure piping, plumbing, or electrical, and they regulate the licensure of the industry, not the issuance of permits. The commissioner in our department is responsible for issuance of permits and enforcement actions against violations of those types. So this is an oversight in our original bill 2 years ago that this language wasn't stricken at that time to clarify it, to make sure there's a distinction between what the board responsibilities are and what the commissioner's responsibilities are.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when it says by the department, striking the department, is it the Department of Labor and Industry, or is it the Department of the Plumbers? What do you call yourselves?
High-pressure piping.
Piping?
Piping.
To Joey.
The department is the Department of Labor and Industry, yeah.
And we're striking that out of that. But you do do the issuing of the permit,
yeah,
right?
But this language is in the high-pressure piping duties and responsibilities, and it should have been removed when it was assigned to the board, the high-pressure piping board. That language should have been removed so that the responsibility for doing inspection is the department. So it's just a,
I see. Thank you.
It's a sentence that needed to be removed.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gallo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, or to the testifier, I'm noticing on page 5 of the DE2 amendment we are changing, and I suspect the answer is going to be we're trying to make this uniform statewide, but how many of these types of contractors do we have in towns of 5,000 or fewer people? First of all, that would be my first question, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe we know the exact number of that. What happened was when we changed and modified the language to require licensed plumbers in communities less than 5,000, we did not include the water conditioning installers and contractors, and that's what this does, so that no matter what community you're in now, if you're installing water conditioning or plumbing, you have to have a license to do that. We've had a number of contacts with various associations, hardware stores, trying to get information out to them so that they'll understand that if they are going to continue installing water conditioners, they have to be licensed through the department.
Representative Gottwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just point out some of these smaller communities, they know their people better than anybody else. We've always had this provision in the past that allowed them to kind of deal with this themselves because of their small nature and their familiarity with who's actually doing this kind of contracting in their community. And I realize we've taken it in part away from them for plumbing, but I guess I'm kind of disappointed we're doing this. Some of these smaller towns have enough burdens to deal with, and this frankly creates another one.
Representative Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and perhaps Mr. Joey or Representative Mahoney. This isn't the same question. I'm just wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the language on Subdivision 2, the part that says, and has successfully passed examination for water conditioning contractors and has successfully passed examination for water conditioning installers. I'm just curious as to what exactly that is and what's the process, what is the licensing process?
Representative,
and how long has it been in effect, too, I guess?
Well, and just for clarification, you're talking about line 3.24, is that where you're
at? I'm on page 5.
Oh, I'm sorry, on page 5.
Yeah. It was the same section that Representative Gottwald was talking about, the 5.28.
Representative Long.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, I think I have to hand that one over to the Assistant Commissioner because they don't allow us to even have anything to do with their tests.
Mr. Joy.
Hi.
Mr. Chair, Representative. The requirements for a water conditioning contractor or installer, it requires 6 months experience for the installer and a year experience for the contractor. And how we verify that is documentation through our plumbing inspection unit as to what they've been doing and their details. It's not as restrictive as the restricted master plumber or restricted journeyman plumber because they're allowed to do more plumbing work. This is just installing basically water softeners.
Representative Patton.
What is the examination then? It says pass the examination for water contact.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have a test
at the end.
So they submit an application to us if they want to be an installer, they have to verify their 6 months experience doing that, and then we have a test for the installer, and then we have a test for the actual contractor.
And the test may be 10 questions or 100 questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not know the number of questions that are on the exam.
I was just wondering, is it a new test?
No, because Mr. Chair, Representative, we already licensed over 5,000, so those, it's the same test that the water conditioning installers and contractors take if they're in a city over 5,000, if they want to work in that city. This is just addresses it for the cities less than 5,000.
Okay.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, in Section 4, could you give me some idea of what the implications of Section 4 are for a homeowner wishing to do work in his own system?
Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, if you're the homeowner and you want to do something in your own home, as long as you're doing it to code, you don't have to pull a permit. Well, I think you have to pull a permit, but you have every right to do whatever you want to in your own home, as long as you're following the building code. So if you if the code was to call for a 12-inch supply line and you put a 12-inch supply line in, there should be no ramifications whatsoever. If you know how to install 4-inch vent lines and drain lines for your toilet and shower on the second floor, and you wish to go ahead and do that, and you're the homeowner, and you go to your local municipality and pull the permit as the homeowner, you can install that and have the inspector out, and the inspector will sign off on it if it is correct. But it should not have any implications for a homeowner to do anything in their own home as long as they do it properly and follow the code. Can I get that one?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Mr. Joykin, back to page talking about the qualifications for licensing of a water softening. If you've been doing this for many years, are you grandfathered in, or do you have to now go through the process of being go through a testing process? If you happen to be an installer, you're a contractor already, and you've already been doing this, do you now have to go through with this language here? Do we now have to take them through this relicensing or requalifications and our retesting or our testing type program?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, this language would require those water conditioning installers and contractors working in communities less than 5,000, if they want to continue to work, would require to submit an application to us to get their license and then pass the examination.
And Ms. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Joachim, when does this go into effect?
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't see an effective date for any specific, so I'm assuming August 1st isn't generally that effective date.
January 1st?
August 1st, isn't August that, 1st? If there's nothing the listed?
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Joachim, thank you, Mr. Chair. What will be the cost to the contractor what will the cost of the examination be that the state of Minnesota is going to charge the contractor and the installer?
Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know the cost of the license for the water conditioning contractor. I think it's $50, but I'm just guessing because we have so many of them.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, is that an annual deal?
Yes.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Joachim, once they've got their installer's license, once they've passed the test, once the contractor's been approved, do they have to come back every 2 years, every 5 years, or is it because technology changes, things change, the codes change, are they going to have to be taking a test or reapplying for this license as a water conditioner contractor in, say, 5 years or 2.5 years, or what, is there anything of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the renewal of the license is annual, and the plumbing board would be the one that establishes if there's any continuing education requirement to maintain that license renewal. So we have anywhere from, we issue 110,000 licenses a year, and the range of continuing education runs from 6 hours a year to 24 credits in a three-year period for our code officials. They renew theirs every 3 years, so most of them average about 6 to 8 hours a year of continuing education required.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Joachim, it'll be $50 for the contractor for a license. What's the cost for the installer, the contractor?
Mr. Chair, Representative, again, I don't know the exact cost of the license. I have to look that up and get back to you, but I think it's somewhere in the $50 range, and I'm guessing both of them are about that same range.
And the renewal license, Mr. Chair, and the renewal license will be the same?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Mr. Chair, to Representative Anderson's comments, I knew that this would kind of bring some of this up, so I did manage to contact about a half a dozen water conditioning installers, some of the larger ones and some of the very small ones, a couple person shop, and they saw no problem with this. Many of them are doing the cities under 5,000 already, and it should not affect altogether that many, but I suspect we will get a few phone calls on it, and we will have to direct them to the Department of Labor and Industry, and they've made it very simple for the restricted plumbers to get their restricted plumber's license. I see no reason why they would make it any different to get that particular license on the water conditioner. But the real reason for the water conditioning license is part of what you were talking about, is the continuing education. Stuff changes. Codes change. Facilities change. I mean, 20 years ago, you didn't do anything with plastic. Today, you do almost everything in these particular situations with plastic, except for a couple of fittings. 10 years ago, you just soldered in those metal fittings. Now, today, there's a process that takes about half the time, and you just compression fit it with a hydraulic wrench. So they do change, and the systems of the water softening do change. So hopefully this will bring people up to date and put the latest, if they're installing the latest kind of water conditioner, they'll have the training to do it.
Representative Pepin, and actually before you go, we apparently have the water fee statute with how much those fees are for you, Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, the examination fees are $50 for the examination. The contractor's license fee is $70, and the installer's license fee is $35.
All right. Thank you. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe my question then will be best directed to Ms. Newman. So the test costs $50 or the licensure? Is it one cost or is that double cost?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, the exam is $50 and the license is $70 for the contractor,
okay,
and $35 for the installer.
Okay. Thank you. That helps. And then my only other question is on the test itself. Is that can that be done by mail, or is it in a central location? Is it in one location?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we provide all the testing in our offices at the Department of Labor and Industry, and so we'll schedule. We have four or five water conditioning applications. We may have four or five master plumbers. We may have four or five journeyman plumber testing. So we have a test facility that'll sit about 60 people. So we schedule them, try to coordinate it with them best we can to get all of them in as quick as we can.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Anderson, is there a further? There's another portion of the bill, I understand, that Mr. Joachim was going to address. Representative Mahoney, do you want him to regard as the cities? Mr. Joachim.
Mr. Chair. Section 3 is an amendment addressing some issues we've had with a court case. We had a court case in the city of Morris that addressed housing code issues, and it was carried over to a situation in Mankato Mankato had an ordinance that said if you put an addition onto your home, it has to be enclosed exterior-wise within 6 months, I believe it was.
and was taken to court and said because of this previous court case, the city cannot control how you and when you put a time limit on a closure of a home. State building code says you have to continue to work on the permit within every 180 days, but it doesn't say you have to enclose it. And so cities need this ordinance so that if my neighbor is building an addition on their home, that the city could say, if you don't have it enclosed in 6 months, we're going to cite you for it because the neighbors are complaining. And what typically happens is you get one that runs a year and a half, 2 years, and they don't put any siding on it, and they don't cover it with the sheathing, and they don't put the roof on it, and pretty soon you have an eyesore. And this would allow municipalities to at least set a time limit to say, get it done. And with recognition, because we have some homes that may take a year or two to build, this would not be applicable to, but it would address the issues that when you run into somebody that doesn't complete a project, and this would give the city's authority to do that.
Right. And Mr. Chair,
Representative Mahoney,
on page 2.20, the city, the local regulation may not require completion of exterior work earlier than 180 days. I insisted upon that earlier than 180 days, giving someone 6 months in the event they started in the fall and didn't really want to go put siding on at 30 below zero so they could complete it in March when it's only 30 above. So, I mean, I tried to get as reasonable for municipalities and for homeowners or someone doing remodeling as I could. And they can go up to a year if they want, if the municipality wants to do it a year. Or 18 months for that matter, but they have to give them at least 6 months.
Mr. Chair, committee members, within municipal ordinances, there's always an allowance for extension of time requested by the homeowner, but this would allow them to say, okay, we've extended it long enough, you need to get this enclosed, the neighbors are complaining, it's an eyesore, it needs something done to it.
All right. Representative Anderson.
Pick it up, Mr. Chair. Mr. Duncan, that was the one question that they could get extension. The other question was, I take it, Representative Mahoney, that you, when talking to water softener people, they're aware that this is built, this language is probably forthcoming, and I'm taking it that, Mr. Joe Akam, that you will notify all water softener people throughout the state about this, and this is gathered up.
Yes, we've in our last go around with the master restricted master plumbers and restricted journeymen, we found a number of more contacts that we weren't aware of, and I'm sure we will find more in regarding to this. But we've sent out or will send out to all of the plumbing heating associations and information and try and get information out to the hardware stores, etc.
And I will say this for the department on the restricted plumbers license, they have done. They have really worked very hard to get that information out to not just the suppliers, but to the hardware stores and to the resort owners and everybody that could possibly, maybe with some strange thread that you could possibly hardly see. If you've got 6 months experience, you could be a restricted plumber. I can't believe how easy we made it and how hard they worked to get that done. And you still, this year, I've gotten a couple calls that, you know, how you never notified me, and actually they did. I went and checked. So, yeah, we're going to have that, and we'll make accommodations as best we can. The department will, and when you have complaints from your districts, we'll put an extension on next year, more likely than not.
All right. Are there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify regarding the bill? If you could come down, please, and thank you, Mr. Joykin. And, sir, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Phil Rains with Associated Builders and Contractors in Minnesota. I just wanted to note that my good friend, Mr. Mahoney, here, has put together a very good bill in conjunction with the Department of Labor and Industry. And I don't often get to come up here and say that on one of his bills, but I certainly want to take the opportunity when I have the chance.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? All right, thank you. Anyone further would like to testify regarding the bill? Representative Mahoney.
We'll talk to the schools before we get to higher ed.
All right. So you did not intend to do anything with 1834 at this point?
No.
All right. Then members, seeing no further discussion.
I'd like to renew my motion.
Representative Mahoney renews his motion to pass House File 927 as amended to Higher Education Workforce Development Policy and Finance Division. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say at the same time. Motion prevails. Mr. Representative Mahoney, any further announcements you wanted to make before we adjourn?
Have a good one.
All right. Our next meeting is on Tuesday, and so until then, we are adjourned.